Investable Universe is about thematic topics in real assets investing. This is what we mean by the global market of things: real estate, infrastructure, land, energy, and other commodities that have historically been viewed as boring old income investments. But take a look at the shifts underway in these asset classes, from industry disruptors to new investors to emerging markets to geopolitics, and you'll find these assets are very interesting. We'll talk about private equity, venture capital, corporate VC, sovereign wealth funds, listed markets, crazy startups, some old guard investment firms, some maverick entrepreneurs, and some paradigm-shifting technologies. One thing is certain, no corner of the global market of things will be left untouched by the changes happening right now, and that's what we talk about on this podcast. In 2020, in the depths of the COVID pandemic, one asset class more than almost any other drew investors as a relative safe haven from market volatility. That asset was gold, which set an all-time price record of just over $2,000 per ounce in August 2020. As we're recording this today in mid-2021, with the vaccine rollout well underway in many economies and signs of a light at the end of the tunnel, there's still a compelling market case to make for gold, as a round of super generous fiscal stimulus, particularly here in the U.S., raises the specter of inflation. Is this a win-win market for gold? For perspectives, I'm joined by Wade Gunther, a partner at Wilshire Phoenix Funds, an ETF sponsor here in the New York City area. Prior to joining Wilshire Phoenix, Wade worked for more than 15 years in financial services, including over 10 years in the ETF space while serving as a portfolio analyst and portfolio managers at Horizons ETFs and Global X ETFs. Wilshire Phoenix recently rolled out a new gold ETF, ticker WGLD, that offers enhanced exposure to the all-season commodity. Wade, thank you for joining me on Investable Universe this week.
It's really great to be here. Thanks for having us on.
Great. So this is going to be interesting. I love talking about gold. If you could just maybe recap the market in gold. It's been a few months since we talked about it here on the podcast. You know, it seemed like the ultimate durable safe haven. And yet, I think there was maybe an assumption that we'd see gold come off a little bit as economies, you know, back in the reflation trade, economies recovering a little bit, the vaccine rollout, seeing countries recover. But do you see a further upside case for gold?
So just to start off the gold recap from last year, I mean, gold was up north of 20% with a pretty stable and low volatility. And gold has been pretty flat this year to start off for the first 4 months or so. And we think that it's, as you said, is a safe haven asset. And we believe that gold will continue to show strength for the remainder of 2020, mainly because of the following three things. One is inflation, the greater than anticipated near-term inflation. I think the annual inflation for April was somewhere around 4%.
Yeah.
And in March, it was around 2.5%. And these are really large moves off of a low base in 2020. So we expect this trend to continue because of wage increases and supply shortages that have ratcheted prices up to another level. And just a quick story for you, a friend is renovating their house and a contractor said that they paid $17 for a piece of wood that now costs $75.
Absolutely.
So PVC pipe that used to be $3 is now $15 with purchase limits. This is happening in a lot of sectors, not just housing. And we think it could influence the industrials and precious metals markets as well. Number two, equity market volatility. You alluded to the vaccine rollout, and we view this as more relevant for the end of 2020 as equity markets being forward-looking, looking to a recovery. Now, the markets, again, being forward-looking, seem to be beyond the recovery talk and looking at the magnitude of that recovery. And the higher inflation is being viewed as an impact to that magnitude of recovery or expected recovery. So the S&P 500 last year had a really high volatility, somewhere around 30, 34%, more than double its historical average. And the S&P 500 volatility for 2021 so far, up until, let's say, the end of April, was pretty benign. But now in May, things have kind of gotten a little bit more rocky. Like even today's today's session has been down. Volatility has been up. And we believe that these volatile periods could really be influencing gold because of that safe haven that you alluded to earlier. Mm-hmm. And a lot of investors look to that as a safe haven source. And then the last thing I just wanted to touch on was futures. The futures curve is in contango, and it's just kind of giving us a slight glimpse into what the gold trend could be going forward.
How long has the gold futures market been in contango?
I don't have a lot of data on this, but the current curve that goes out to December 2022 is in contango pretty much for every period that's being measured, almost every period that's being measured out to then.
Yeah. So here, just to follow up on your second point on equity market volatility, because I really want to emphasize this for our listeners. If you had told us, if a person had told us maybe 6 months ago that we'd be looking at significant equity market volatility mid-year in 2021, one might assume, as I certainly would have assumed, that, you know, maybe there's been some new variant in COVID, or there's been some hiccup in the rollout of the vaccine, or there's been some other complication owing to the COVID recovery, not that robust economic figures would be driving, that the equity market sell-off would be driven primarily by recovery, right? Does that seem strange to you?
I mean, those are valid mm-hmm. points. Like, I think people like to look at an external force to influence markets, but the data that's underlying inflation, I think it's just such a relevant factor, because it was coming off such a low base, low price levels in the year over year to 2020, that the new inflation numbers coming out have been so much higher than they have been since like 2008, 2009, that investors are kind of spooked a little bit. And I think that's where it's coming from, not some type of external force we didn't see coming.
So in terms of the sort of sticker shock, let's say, of the inflation prints, some of this possibly, I don't know if you agree on this, maybe due to maybe market participants trying to figure out how to trade a market under the regime of Fed Chair Jerome Powell's average inflation targeting, right? He said that the Fed is going to sit tight even with these higher inflation prints, and that they're confident that this is going to be either intermittent or transitory moves higher in inflation, and that they're not necessarily going to jump in right away and intervene in this market. Maybe it's not something that market participants are used to.
I mean, I guess we'll believe it when we see it, right? Yeah. When crimes are committed, you follow the money. Yeah. So when the Fed will adjust when they see the data. If the data says and suggests to make a move, then they will likely do that. And if they don't, then they probably won't.
Now, apropos of other central banks, have you and your team noticed any particular trends in central bank buying of gold? And maybe you can share with our listeners exactly how much central bank purchases of gold affect the overall gold price. Like, what kind of percentage move you tend to see?
Percentage move is really difficult to estimate, but mm-hmm. central banks have traditionally been massive purchasers of gold, mm-hmm. and they have been purchasing gold on a net basis pretty much every quarter since 2018. We would expect central banks to continue buying gold as a measure of stability and a hedge against a weakening US dollar, which we see as a gold driver in itself. Mm-hmm. For example, the USD relative to the euro over the last year is up probably more than 10%. Mm-hmm. And we believe that the US federal stimulus has a lot to do with the general US dollar weakness. And for example, the continued bond buying program, printing money, that accommodating fiscal policy, these are all growth measures that have resulted in a lower US dollar relative to other currencies. Mm-hmm. Since gold is often priced in US dollar terms, the lower US dollar makes gold and other US dollar denominated assets relatively more attractive in other currencies.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the very generous fiscal stimulus packages being passed right now. These are politically palatable packages, which is not always the case when you're trying to increase government spending to such a dramatic degree. Sometimes there's a lot more pushback. But infrastructure, very generous infrastructure packages in the offing here in the U.S. And you mentioned the impact of just that reflation and supply chain disruptions and recovery related market dynamics are having on prices of commodities like lumber and PVC HSE for people who want to do home improvement or home building process projects. But when we talk about the infrastructure spending package, that's something that here in the U.S., not to mention other infrastructure investment projects in other major economies, could potentially have a dramatic effect on other, let's say, industrial metals like copper, like iron ore. I think of those industrial metals as sort of the classic infrastructure package commodities to move. But how could this affect gold? Because I don't think of gold as something that is necessarily a component of infrastructure, traditional infrastructure spending, but am I mistaken?
No, I don't think you're mistaken. It's not really a traditional source of an infrastructure spend, but gold is a major input to a lot of healthcare, personal consumer electronics industry that people use every day, because gold is a very good energy conductor. And it also has a very low decay coefficient relative to something like, say, copper. Once it oxidizes, it just doesn't work as well. And gold is found in so many consumer electronics and healthcare applications that we believe will only increase the demand for gold as the demand for technology to integrate our lives into everything, to take tasks that are difficult and make them easier, is only going to increase. And we feel like gold is going to be an input driver to all of these solutions because of those benefits.
Mm-hmm. Now, with apropos of other industrial metals, other commodities, these, you know, prices have been pushed higher by some of the supply chain disruptions we've seen over the past year plus. These are commodities that are not they're not easy to produce. I mean, they're CapEx intensive and they've been CapEx constrained in recent years. Has gold been similarly affected by the same kinds of supply chain disruptions that other metals have?
That's a difficult question to answer. I'm really not much of a supply chain expert when it comes to gold. We can really infer this just through the price action of similar highly correlated commodities like silver, palladium, platinum, other precious metals. And if their supply is disrupted, then we can only reasonably estimate that it's going to be a similar situation for gold. Extraction is already an expensive process. Yeah. It's not like gold bars just sit in bar format at 99.99 purity in the ground. It's it's a process.
Yeah.
The supply chain that is difficult for other metals should be similar for gold as well.
Yeah. So, okay, given the supply chain disruptions, reflation trade, I know some market analysts and some market observers think we're on the cusp of a new commodity super cycle. Do you think that we're entering maybe a golden age of commodity ETFs? Because, you know, it's like you start with the concept and the ETF will follow. And we'll get to Wilshire's own ETF approach in just a second. But I wondered if you had something to say more generally about the appeal of commodity ETFs in this market environment that we find ourselves in now.
Yeah, I wouldn't really necessarily think that we're entering a new golden age of commodity ETFs. And I guess that would really seem to imply that there's been this massive run-up in commodity ETFs coming to the market. Yeah. And we've only really seen like, what, three new ETFs in 2021, maybe five last year. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have the view that the commodity ETF space has generally been void of innovation. And we stand at the forefront of financial innovation and saw this as a great opportunity through the adaptive exposure of WGLD to bring innovation to investors. And that's why we launched this strategy in this space in particular.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about WGLD, the Wilshire Gold Index ETF. How is it different than from other gold-backed ETFs that are listed and have a ticker? I think there's a couple that people may be familiar with if they trade actively in that space. What is it how is this approach different?
Most other gold ETFs in the market they only provide exposure to gold or gold futures. And some funds employ intricate strategies coupled with derivatives to achieve their objectives. WGLD differentiates itself because it seeks to outperform a standalone investment in gold and reduce the risk profile of gold without the use of derivatives, futures, or leverage. Mm-hmm. WGLD achieves this investment objective by utilizing the innovative technology embedded in the Wilshire Gold Index that systematically adapts to realized volatility and rebalances the only two assets in the fund, which are physical gold and cash.
So that's interesting. There's only physical gold and cash in the fund. Absolutely no futures, options, forwards, any other derivative. This is never, and so it sounds like this has not been done in the gold ETF space before.
This has never been done, I don't think, in any space, let alone the commodity space. Yeah.
So can you talk about how, so it sounds like it's being dynamically rebalanced. I mean, obviously it's an ETF, so it's got all day tradability, which would suggest to me that it's being fairly regularly rebalanced. Can you talk about the frequency with which it's rebalanced using cash and how you're able to sort of, I don't want to say anything promissory, that it definitely outperforms the standalone investment gold, but how do you strive to do that?
Right. It seeks to outperform this, the investment in gold. So it'll do is it rebalances monthly and it evaluates the realized volatility of gold and the realized volatility of the S&P 500 in determining how much gold to have in the portfolio. Mm-hmm. So if the gold volatility is really high in a particular month, I think it's a 45-day look back period. Uh-huh. Then the fund, or it tracks the Wilshire Gold Index, and so the index will likely reduce its exposure to gold. Mm-hmm. And then if the S&P 500 volatility is also high, then it may take that gold reduction and increase it a little bit because of the general philosophy of rotating to gold as a safe haven asset when equity market volatility is high. Mm-hmm. So that's how the volatility is just generally determined. And then it's rebalanced every month. Mm-hmm. So it is continually attesting the volatility in the market and determining its allocation to gold and then its allocation to cash. Mm-hmm. So if the allocation to gold at any point in time is, say, 85%, the other 15% will be allocated to cash.
Mm-hmm. So I'd like to ask a very general question about alt gold, aka Bitcoin, or other crypto assets. For the past year plus, Bitcoin believers, true believers, if you like to say crypto true believers, have really touted Bitcoin as an alternative to gold, both as an inflation hedge and as a portfolio diversifier. I wonder if you have any perspective on how the rapid emergence of crypto assets either has or has not affected the appeal of gold as either an inflation hedge, as a relative safe haven, or as a portfolio diversifier for, let's say, serious investors?
This is a difficult question to answer because we love crypto. Like there's no question about that. Mm-hmm. But there just hasn't been enough time, and crypto hasn't been around through as many market cycles or inflationary cycles to really understand how it behaves on a reasonably consistent basis. And one thing we know for sure about gold is that it has been around for a very long time. It has stood the test of time and has generally been perceived as a safe haven asset, and has also generally been perceived as a hedge against some levels of inflation. So just in terms of reliability, we believe that gold is the better investment when we're talking about these types of market situations versus crypto, again, which just does not have the longevity for us to really come to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee a future where there's a way of combining the two worlds, like, you know, crypto and gold, or, you know, other precious metals into new stablecoin type instruments? Do you think that maybe hybrid or stable coins are going to become a thing in the near future?
This topic is really interesting because gold-backed crypto is, you know, I mean, this exists in the market today. I think Tether is considered like the largest gold-backed crypto stablecoin, where each token is backed with physical gold. And it's great because the value of the token should appreciate if gold increases or if increased token demand pushes the price higher, and that the value of gold as a physically underlying asset could act as a floor if the token had a lot of selling pressure. Yes. So gold-backed tokens have been increasingly popular way to invest in gold. But you know, we see a lot of limitations in this space that we haven't really fully understood yet. And I would say one of them would be gold storage. So tokens that are not backed by physical gold are speculative rather than an investment. And investors should be looking for tokens or coins that are backed by physical gold and provide a clear understanding of how and where the physical gold is stored. Number two, the fees, the exchange fees can be massive and erode the value of a token investment. So because they're so high, I mean, you can get a physically backed gold ETF for whatever your discount brokerage fees are, which are significantly less than a lot of these exchange fees for tokens. The location, like where is the gold stored? Many tokens store their physical gold all over the world. So if you want to exchange your token for the physical asset, it may be difficult and expensive if you live in a different country. Then you have to deal with exchange rates and delivery. And I think the last thing is insurance. It's important to know how token insurance works for the underlying gold. Crypto is digital and has often been more susceptible to hacker attempts than say physical gold or gold in an ETF wrapper. How does that all work out? We're not really sure. And you know, we believe that offering WGLD in an ETF wrapper was the best solution for investors, even though we see these other solutions as very interesting.
Yeah. It sounds like, just theoretically speaking, a token, a stable coin that's backed by physical gold, maybe that will put, maybe gold will put a floor under that token, but you're still going to have exposure to the price of other tokens. You've got, you know, the way people talk about equity risk or stock market risk, you've got token risk. And then if there's, you know, if, you don't know, Bitcoin or Dogecoin or some other thing blows up, that's, you're going to be affected somehow in terms of the volatility of your own investment there. And so it sounds like that would be something that, you know, we'd have to take into, one would have to take into consideration.
We would expect massive correlations between the gold, gold-backed tokens and other crypto assets for sure, just for those exact reasons that you mentioned.
Yeah. Now, see, when you describe this approach to, you know, having physical gold and cash in an ETF wrapper, it seems to me that that's an approach that might be replicated with other metals, other whether it's precious metals or, you know, other industrial commodity metals that we talked about. Do you agree? Do you have? Can you say if Wilshire is planning any is planning any moves or rollouts in that direction?
This innovative strategy of adapting exposure based on volatility has essentially made this opportunity endless and opened a massive door of opportunity for investors that we are extremely happy and excited to deliver in the near future. So we think we can apply this strategy to multiple current commodities, asset classes, industries, sectors, and our pipeline is quite robust right now with these ideas. And we're just, again, really excited to start bringing this to investors really soon.
Can you talk about the relative, we talked about gold being attractive despite, you know, last year it was, you know, there was risk off, certainly uncertain, uncertain market sentiment globally, which added to the appeal of gold. This year, it's an inflation hedge, looking for some protection there. Can you talk about the relative appeal of silver vis-a-vis gold? Does that do you expect to see any spillover demand for silver in the current market environment?
That's an interesting question. You know, traditionally, we have seen reasonably high correlations between gold and silver prices. And one of the most common, most understood ways to evaluate silver is through the gold and silver ratio. And like, if we're looking at a reasonably current historical average, say the last 20 years, the ratio is somewhere around 65. Mm-hmm. But like last year, like the 1 year average between last year, from I think a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. was something around 77, absolutely huge number. Yeah. And a lot of it had to do with silver being sold off to such lows. Yeah. So last year, I think gold traded in a range of somewhere between 1500 and 2000 an ounce. Mm-hmm. So essentially 40% from trough to peak. But silver prices traded around 140% from trough to peak. It went down from like $12 to 28 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And this really low silver price caused that gold silver ratio to spike into the over 100 in March of last year. Mm-hmm. So silver looked really attractive and investors took notice, buying it up and then bringing that gold silver ratio back down closer to historical average levels by the end of last year. Mm-hmm. Now, this ratio has continued to climb probably closer to this historical average currently. But again, like it's just that ratio, once it starts to widen out, we see a lot of investors taking a look, is gold overvalued or is silver undervalued if it's high? And then if it's really low, then the opposite. And we think that a lot of investors look at that as a simple and easy way to figure out what their investment strategy is going to be.
Yeah, great. So one final question. How do interested parties find your amazing dynamic gold ETF, WGLD?
WShares.com. This is where our ETF brand homepage is. And mm-hmm. WGLD is available. All the information is available there. Mm-hmm. WGLD is traded on the New York Stock Exchange mm-hmm. and is available on essentially anywhere where you can buy stock, you can trade, and you can trade WGLD.
Excellent. So it is that simple. Wade Guther, thank you so much for breaking down the gold market in 2021 for us here on Investable Universe.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks a lot. That's all we got for Investable Universe this week. If you liked what you heard, share the link, check out the site at investableuniverse.com, or pitch us for future episodes. The address is editor@investableuniverse.com. My name is Rebecca Darst, and you'll hear more from me next time.